President Trump appreciated the briefing and said he would meet Kim Jong-un by May to achieve permanent denuclearization.
And that was Chung Yu-yang. I hope I got that right. And here to join us to talk about this and give us his interpretation of this historic impending meeting, Ambassador John Bolton. Ambassador, good morning. Welcome back to Mornings on the Mall.
Glad to be with you. Thanks for having me.
This is a huge deal. Why is it that President Trump has done something that no other president has done, being able to get together and meet with a leader of North Korea?
Well, this is definitely diplomatic shock and awe for you. And if there's a man or woman in Washington brave enough to say, oh, I knew this was going to happen, I expected this outcome, I'd like them to stand up today and say so. And I think it's, look, there are clearly elements of risk with it, but I think it short circuits what North Korea was trying to do. And I think in that sense, the president has taken advantage of North Korea not expecting the unexpected from the administration. I think clearly North Korea is very close to having the capacity to hit targets in the United States with nuclear weapons, and their playbook said when you get that close, start negotiations with the United States, throw some dust in the air, distract them for 6 months, 9 months, whatever it takes. And then you can announce, well, now we've got the capability we've been after for 30 years, and you're home free. What Trump has done is turn that on its head. And I think this session between the two leaders could well be a fairly brief session where Trump says, tell me you've begun total denuclearization, because we're not going to have protracted negotiations. You can tell me right now, or we'll start thinking of something else.
How much pain is Kim Jong-un feeling right now, and his country specifically? I mean, that would lead him to make this kind of offer.
I would not think Kim Jong-un feels the slightest pain. I think it's a mistake to say that the sanctions have brought them to their knees. I think what has brought them to their knees is that they've figured out that Donald Trump is not Barack Obama. And when he says he's prepared to use military force, he means it, unlike Obama and some of his other predecessors.
So the existential threat.
Let me just finish here.
Go ahead.
I think this is important. I don't think the president wants to use military force at all. But I think the difference is he's not afraid to use it. And I think the North Koreans have figured that out.
Okay, my only point is sort of in summary, he's more worried about self-preservation. This is the existential threat directly to Kim Jong-un rather than concerns for his people who are suffering under these sanctions.
You are absolutely right about that. And that's why, and look, I've been over the years on both sides of the issue of whether sanctions can be effective. I think actually they turn out to be fairly limited in effect, because I tell you, Kim Jong-un and his inner circle have suffered not one whit from economic sanctions. The people have suffered. I don't doubt that. I don't think he cares.
Do you think it is possible, though, for President Trump to get North Korea to actually really give up their nukes as opposed to just saying that they're going to do it?
Well, I think that's what this meeting between the two leaders will find out very quickly. Unlike, and you can hear even some Democrats saying, oh, my God, there's no preparation for this, weeks and months of lower level negotiation to prepare for it and so on and so forth. That's all off the table. So I think Kim Jong-un is saying to his advisors, or said during the night, because it's daytime there when it's nighttime here, saying to his advisors, where in my briefing book does it say he was going to accept this? Where are the low-level negotiations in Beijing that drag on forever? How's this going to buy us time? I think the president's forcing the decision. I'd go so far as to say this. The announcement last night said the meeting would take place by May. I say let's hold it before the end of March.
Oh, so that quickly.
Where should something like this take place, Ambassador?
I know. I can tell you the precise room where it should take place. At the former headquarters of the League of Nations in Geneva, now owned by the UN, the Palace of Nations, I would hold it in the conference room where Secretary of State James Baker, in January of 1991, met with Iraqi Foreign Minister Tariq Aziz in what George H.W. Bush, president at the time, called going the extra mile for peace, where Bush met, I think it was for like 6 hours, with Tariq Aziz. Put a letter from President Bush to Saddam Hussein in the middle of the table, which Tariq Aziz never picked up. And at the end of that meeting, that extra mile for peace, it was clear Iraq wasn't going to back down, wasn't going to withdraw from Kuwait, and Desert Storm followed. So I think putting Kim Jong-un in the right frame of mind by having the meeting in that conference room would go a long way.
All right, let me ask you about, if I can, about reports involving you this week, because on Tuesday you had a meeting at the White House. I don't know how frequently you visit at the White House or talk with the president, but the conversation and the chatter is that you may be set to replace H.R. McMaster as the National Security Advisor. Could you give us any sense of that?
No, thank you. It's by invariable practice. I don't talk about meetings like that or what the subject was, and I don't talk about the personnel matters. I just think it's inappropriate for me to be commenting one way or the other. And I'd say it this week. I would have said it a year ago. I'll say it a year from now.
No, I appreciate that. But we got to ask. The only other thing I'll say on that issue is, what about like sort of differences you might have on foreign policy with the president? Do those exist, or are you pretty in line with him right now?
Well, you know, over the years, I've probably written a million op-eds and given a million speeches. It's not like I've hidden my foreign policy and national security views.
Not at all.
I'd rather ask you to go back and read all those golden words over the past and draw your own conclusions. I mean, look, I've always been a believer in what William F. Buckley Jr. once said,
yes,
that every person is different from every other person in every conceivable way. That's why I don't like identity politics, and I just think that's the way to proceed.
Okay, well, so you're saying we have homework and there are some differences.
No,
I can appreciate that.
We do not have homework. You ask the question.
All right,
you
fine.
Have homework.
I'll do
not
the homework.
There are probably differences between me now and me 10 years ago. That's the most frightening thing, I think.
Wow.
No, well, just you've evolved. Ambassador Bolton, thank you so much for joining us. Have a fantastic weekend.